Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1350, we feature four stories by new Life Rattle writer, Karina Cotran. Karina Cotran was born in Toronto in 1994 to parents who immigrated to Canada from Israel. Karina and her younger brother AJ grew up in Mississauga. Karina was born 3 months premature with a hearing impairment that has greatly affected her life and influenced her outlook. She's in fourth year of studying professional writing and English at university and loves to write and read. Karina Cotran currently works for her student newspaper and at a retail store. Karina Cotran has written a series of stories that provides extraordinary insight into the world of the hearing impaired. She doesn't explain what it's like to live in a world where you cannot count on sound being consistent. She takes us along with her and lets us experience it. Relying on a cochlear implant to hear, more importantly, relying on the batteries that power it. Protecting that implant that gives the gift of sound, and coping with the sudden silence when things go wrong. Karina shares her experiences with beautiful prose that captures precise telling details, especially the details of sound that we so often overlook. Her way with words would capture your attention, even if the stories were not as compelling as they are. In tonight's first story, our young narrator tries desperately to keep her cool when a policeman's classroom presentation on strangers becomes a test of her ability to follow instructions that she cannot hear, and to make her way to a storage cabinet to retrieve backup batteries for her implant, without attracting the attention of her classmates, her teacher, or of the handsome young officer Ryan. Let's listen now as Karina Cotran reads her story, Silent Lesson, tonight on Life Rattle.
Silent Lesson by Karina Cotran. My grade 5 teacher stands at the front of the class. All right, everyone, this afternoon we have a guest coming to our classroom, Mrs. Flores announces. He is a police officer. His name is Officer Ryan. Students whisper excitedly. My desk partner, Kaylee, turns to me, her blue eyes wide behind purple glasses. A police officer, she exclaims. How cool is that? I can't wait to see him. I tilt my head to the side. I wonder what he's here for. Kaylee shrugs and picks at her purple sequin sweater. I don't know, but I'm happy we don't have to do math today. Her eyes scrunch up. Ick. No math? Yes. I feel even happier about the police officer's visit now. I shoot Kaylee a thumbs up, and she smiles a gap-toothed smile in response. Does he have a gun? Shouts Michael from two rows behind. Indoor voice Michael, Mrs. Flores scolds, with hands on her hips. I'm sure he does. He is a police officer after all. Wicked, cries out Keaton, Michael's desk partner. I want to see it. I swivel in my seat to look at the boys. The chair scrapes against the linoleum floor as Keaton stands up, hands on his desk. Michael leans forward and puts his head on his chin, looking at the closed classroom door. Keaton, sit down, please, Mrs. Flores orders, and then sighs. Officer Ryan will be here soon. Please sit down and behave. We want to show him respect. We hear a knock. Students shift in their seats and crane their necks to see the door. Mrs. Flores strides to the door and shoots us a warning glance that turns into a pleasant smile when she swings the door open to admit Officer Ryan. Whoa! Kaylee whispers in awe. Officer Ryan is tall, really tall. He wears a dark blue uniform with a shiny gold badge on his left chest and a silver name tag that says Ryan in capital letters on his right. Our desks sit in the middle of the front row. I smile with pride. We have the best seat. Officer Ryan stands in front of us, his short brown hair covered by his police hat, hands on his belt. I see a black handle sticking out of the holster on the side of his belt. I gasp. I nudge Kaylee and point. Her eyes widen. "That's so cool," she whispers. Kaylee turns in her seat. I turn with her. We look at Keaton and Michael sitting on the edge of their seats, their wide eyes fixed on the gun. "Hello, everyone," Officer Ryan smiles at us. He has really white teeth. "I hope you guys are all doing well. My name is Officer Ryan and..." "Hi, Officer Ryan," pipes in Philip, the class jokester. Everyone titters. "Philip," Mrs. Flores hisses. She quickly looks back at Officer Ryan and smiles sheepishly. Officer Ryan chuckles. "Hi there, sir," he says, and winks at Philip, glowing with pride. I cross my arms and frown. I want Officer Ryan to talk to me. Kaylee, sulking beside me, wants the same. So today, we are going to talk about strangers. Officer Ryan claps his hands together and turns to write the word on the board in big, scraggly letters. "Now, the first rule about strangers is not to talk to them, I think, but I stay quiet. Even Philip doesn't say anything." "Come on, guys," Officer Ryan pleads. "I know you all know this." Beep, beep. Oh no, my hearing aid battery is dying. I grab my hearing aid in my left ear and squirm in my seat. Where did I leave my new batteries? I inch my hand inside my desk and feel around for the familiar sharp-cornered package. My hands find only a dust bunny. I frown. I didn't put any extra batteries in my desk this morning. Stupid. I reprimand myself. I know there are batteries in the corner cupboard at the back of the room. I try to think of a way to get up without distracting everyone. I bite my lip. Guys, the first rule about strangers is that you don't talk to strangers. Officer Ryan goes back to the board. The chalk screeches as he writes, "Don't talk to..." Halfway through, the scratching on the board goes silent. My shoulders slump. My battery has died. I can't hear anything. I see Kaylee laughing next to me. I look around and notice the rest of the class is laughing too. I look back to the front. Officer Ryan still has his back to us. I realize he is still talking. I laugh along with the class, not wanting to be left out. I need to get my battery somehow. Officer Ryan turns back around. I read his lips. "So if a stranger ever gives you candy, no matter what, you don't take it. And if they force you to, you take it, but never eat it. Throw it out as soon as possible." He takes a step forward. "The most common way a stranger will try to talk to you is by pretending you have a lost dog and..." He turns sideways. I only catch parts of his speech. He turns to face the other way and I lip read, "To find the dog and..." "You help look for it with them." Officer Ryan stops in front of our desk. Kaylee straightens up, hands clasped in front of her. "So," he slams a hand on our desk. I jump. Kaylee looks at me, eyebrows raised. I turn back and see Officer Ryan looking at me. "So what do you do?" I didn't hear the first part of his question. I cough. What? I stutter. My face feels hot. Officer Ryan smiles. "What do you do when a stranger offered you candy?" "Oh," I say, my voice soft, my heart racing. "I don't eat it. I keep my voice level, not too loud, not too soft, I hope." "Good job." Officer Ryan raises his hand for a high five. Beaming, I lean forward and smack my palm against his. I rest back in my chair. My heart rate slows down. I see Mrs. Flores out of the corner of my eye. She stares at me, brows furrowed, arms crossed. I gulp and feel the heat rise in my face again. I feel the floor vibrate. I look behind me and see everyone standing up, and stocking chairs at the back of the classroom. Confused, I scampered to help them. Kaylee grabbed my arm. Karina, I was saying your name. Oh, sorry, I was, distracted. I look at her lips. They still shine from the lip gloss she put on this morning. We need to move the desk. Help me. We team up and move the desk to the side of the classroom, creating a big space in the middle of the room. Students huddled by the wooden cupboards. Yes, maybe I can get my batteries now. Kaylee got my hand again. I lead her to the back of the group and squeeze my way to the wooden cupboard. She frowns, tugs her hand back, and makes her way to the front of the group. I stand right in front of the cupboard. I look around. At my left, Keaton stands on tiptoes, and on my right, Philip and Michael jostle each other, trying to reach the front. I move my hand behind me. I grasp the cold handle of the cupboard and open it slowly. Mrs. Flores moves to the side. I freeze. She looks past me at Philip and Michael and shakes her head. My hand creeps in. I stretch my arms to reach my batteries. My thumb hits a sharp corner. Yes, I smile. I grab the box. After a few seconds of tinkering, I grab a battery. I pull my hand out and softly close the cupboard door. I put my hand in the fold of my shirt to hide the battery from view. I peek over my black-rimmed glasses at Mrs. Flores. She looks at the front of the class to Officer Ryan setting up three plastic boxes on the floor. The boxes have yes, maybe, and no written on them. I put the battery down in my front pocket and take off my hearing aid. I scrunch my hand in the fold of my shirt. The little brown cashew-shaped device has a small mold fitted for my ear. I stare ahead and open the little silver compartment on the side of the hearing aid, pop the dead battery out, and put it in my back pocket. I grab the new battery and quickly pop it in. I look beside me again. The boys stare at Officer Ryan. I put the hearing aid on my ear and flick the switch on the top. So, guys, I read the scenario, and you need to put a slip of paper in the box that you think is the right answer. Officer Ryan's voice booms. I flinch at the sudden burst of noise. I hear my classmates scuffing their feet on the floor, the loud roaring of the air conditioner above me, the scraping sound of the boxes being dragged across the floor, and Mrs. Flores's voice sounding shrilly over the noise, reprimanding a student at the front. I adjust my hearing aid, and, for a brief moment, I wish I could turn it back off.
That was Karina Quatran reading her story, Silent Lesson. In our second story, our narrator's audiologist offers her the opportunity to have her cochlear implant upgraded with a program that allows the implant to tune certain noises in and out. Problem is, the cochlear chooses which noises to tune in and out, not the wearer. Let's listen now as Karina Quatran reads her story, The Upgrade.
The Upgrade by Karina Quatran. I gaze around in my audiologist's office at the kids' hospital. Multicolored posters with little children playing and wearing bright-colored hearing aids or cochlear implants on their ears covered the white walls. The whirring of the fan falters. I shift in the too small child seat. Mom sits in a bigger chair across from me, examining a large poster with a diagram of a bright blue cochlear implant. The smell of hand sanitizer makes my stomach roil. I'd rather be in my grade 10 math class. I purse my lips. I hear a soft click. I turn and see the heavyset door open. Lori, my audiologist, walks in, heels clacking against the tiles. How are you? She asks, and smiles at me. She shakes Mom's hand and then slips into her seat in front of the computer. I'm good, same old, I reply. I come here once a year for a checkup on my cochlear implant. It's light tan in color and blends in with my light-colored hair and fair skin. Lori crosses her leg and swivels the chair to face me. All right, let's get started. I move to take off my cochlear, but stop when Lori raises her hand. Before we do start, I want to let you know something, she says. Your cochlear is due for an upgrade. I raise my eyebrows. An upgrade? Lori nods. You know, people with normal hearing have the ability to tune out sounds and shift their hearing back and forth. I nod. With my cochlear, I can't do that. I hear everything, from the whirring of air conditioners to the scraping of chairs to the little conversation people have around me. So this upgrade, I say? Lori shifts back to the computer and clicks on a program on the desktop. A screen with a scatterplot graph appears. They manage to create a program where if you shift to a different program on your cochlear, you can now have the option of tuning certain noises in and out, she explains. The flaw is you won't be able to choose which noise to tune in and out. The cochlear will do that for you, depending on the volume of the noises. I nod, intrigued. So I can have this program on my cochlear now? I feel a flutter of excitement at the possibility of tuning in and out noises. Yes, Lori smiles. Do you want to give it a try? I bite my lip. Accepting the upgrade will mean the way I hear things now will change. I'll have to spend a couple of days adjusting to the new sound. Sure, why not, I say. Mom shifts in her seat. Lori stretches out her arm. I take off my cochlear, and my world plunges back into familiar silence. Lori plucks it from my hand. The magnetic coil swings from her fist. She opens the compartment below it and plugs in a wire from the computer. I watch the cursor move on the computer screen as Lori types. The scatter plot shifts and changes shape with each click. She stops abruptly, unplugs the device, and hands the cochlear back to me. I hesitate for a moment, my fingers trembling, and put the device back on my ear. I press the little silver button on the side. Beep. I hear the world again. I tilt my head and listen. Something is missing. The whirring of the fan. Mom leans forward. How is it? She asks. My head whips towards her. Her voice startles me. It sounds foreign. Her high-pitched voice is now muffled and soft. Is this how people feel when they have in earplugs, I wonder? Speak again, I say, and jump at the sound of my voice. It doesn't sound like me speaking. The pitch seems to have deepened. I sound like a boy. Mom sits on the edge of her seat now, purse clutched in her hands. Karina? I frown deeply, my brows furrowed. Mom doesn't sound like my mom. I don't like it. A lump forms in my throat. My lungs feel like they are being squeezed into a small tube. I breathe forcefully, my exhalation sounding raspy and too deep. I shake my head. I hate it. I don't want it. Don't worry, Lori says. Her normal high-pitched voice now sounds deep. You'll get used to it. I drag my feet on the sidewalk. I can hear the rustle of trees in the wind. I look at the passing cars on the street beside me. I can't hear them. I strain my ears, but I can only hear a dull rumble and the loud rustling of the stupid trees. A headache forms in my right temple. My eyes well up as I recall my last class today. All I kept hearing was the stupid buzzing noise. I missed the entire lesson because the teacher's voice was all but silent to me. All I could register was the stupid buzzing noise. I was walking out of the classroom when I stood directly under the fan, and the buzzing noise reached a high pitch. It was so loud that I almost wrenched off my cochlear. Tears slip out. Why am I hearing things that are supposed to be tuned out? I wipe my face with the back of my hand. Instead of hearing the cars like I normally do, I'm hearing the leaves rustle in the wind. I frown. My head pounds. I stand on the porch and feel the rise and fall of my chest as my heartbeat slows down beneath my palm. I wipe my tears with my shirt. I feel calmer now. I open the front door and step inside. I kick off my shoes and dump my backpack beside them. I walk to the kitchen. An incessant buzzing pops up in my left ear. My nostrils flare. I grit my teeth. Where is that noise coming from now? Mom is washing the dishes. I can hear a dark clatter of glass hitting glass. How was your day? I lip-read Mom's question. Did the teacher say anything about you being absent? I cross my arms. The buzzing continues. I wouldn't know. Mom's face scrunches up. What do you mean? She turns off the tap. The buzzing stops. I frown. Since when does running water sound like a buzzing noise? I wouldn't know because I couldn't hear them the whole day, I say. You couldn't hear them? I can hear Mom perfectly now. Her voice sounds clear, but still too deep. Yeah, I shrug nonchalantly. Karina, enough with this attitude and please explain, she says, hands on her hips. She turns and puts the dish in the microwave. After a few unnatural shrill beeps, the microwave rumbles. I stare at it. Why is the microwave so loud? I rub my ear. My headache intensifies. Mom waves her hand in front of my face. I look at her. She is saying something. Tired of lip reading, I stalk to the microwave and jam the off button. The rumbling stops. Karina. The dam breaks. I start crying and slump down to the floor. My head hurts. I can't stop the noises. Mom makes a startled motion and kneels down next to me. She places her hand on my arm. Mom, I can't hear anything. No voices, nothing. All I hear are the stupid noises of stupid things. I want it to stop. What stupid things? Her normally comforting voice sounds deep and foreign. A shutter, the fan, the microwave, the water, a gesture above me. When all those are on, that's all I can focus on. The stupid upgrade isn't tuning in on the right things. Everyone sounds so weird and different, and it doesn't sound like them. You don't sound like you. I don't sound like me. Baby, Lori said that you'll get used to it. I frown. Lori doesn't know what she's talking about. I cross my arms. Karina, stop acting like a child. You just don't like change. You'll get used to it. I straighten up and look at Mom. Stern eyes peer down at me. Mom, my voice catches. Mom, that's easy for you to say. Your hearing is always going to stay the same. There's no upgrades, no nothing. How can you change something that isn't meant to be changed? She slides down next to me and places a comforting arm around my shoulders. How can I get used to something that always remains constant, I say. I can't get used to it. Karina, you will get used to it. I stand back up and glare down at Mom. My face heats up. You were never deaf, I yell. You can't tell me to get used to something you don't understand. Mom hoists herself back up, her eyes now red. Then make me understand, she shouts and waves her arms at me. I can't. How can I? You have perfect hearing. I say bitterly, I want to go back to Lori. I'm changing back to my old program. I can't do this. I can't keep hearing the stupid fan, the stupid microwave, and the stupid water, but not hear what people are saying. Okay, Mom sighs and her shoulders slump. We'll go back to Lori tomorrow.
That was Corina Cotran reading her story, The Upgrade. In our third story tonight, a teenage girl considers which bathing suit will best show her tan, and the importance of an appealing body spray as she prepares to attend a friend's pool party, where a certain young man will be in attendance. Despite looking and smelling fabulous, the incompatibility of a cochlear implant and a swimming pool turns the party into a less than stellar experience. Let's listen now as Corina Cotran reads her story, Pool Party.
Pool Party by Corina Cotran. I grab my duffel bag from my closet and dash to the wicker basket in the adjoining washroom. I sift through my bathing suits. I have to find the right one to wear to Dana's end of grade 9 pool party. Liam will be there. My cheeks heat up and my smile widens at the thought of him. I want Liam to notice me today. I need to choose the right outfit. I grab my yellow bikini with the white polka dots. It will show off my tan. I reach for my towel on top of the crumpled bed sheets, roll it up, and stuff it in the duffel bag. I grab my sunglasses, put them on top of my head, spritz myself with tropical summer breeze body spray, and open my bedroom door. "Bye, Mom," I holler as I slip on my flip-flops. Dad is at a Jays game with AJ. "Have fun," she shouts as I grab my keys off the hook. "Make sure your cochlear doesn't get wet." "Okay, bye." I hoist my duffel bag over my shoulder and open the door to blazing sunshine. I don my sunglasses and welcome the feeling of heat on my skin. I lock the door and head down the stone steps to Dana's house. A 10-minute walk later, I'm at the driveway of her towering stone house. A red brick pathway leads to a set of double doors. Zzz. I fish my phone out of my back pocket. A text from Dana. I told her to text me because I'm having problems hearing on my new cell phone. "Hey, girlie, when you are here, just walk to the backyard. See you soon." I close the message, then another one pops up. "By the way, Liam's here." She ends the message with a winky face. My heart races. For a split second, I consider turning back. I steel myself, adjust my duffel bag, and stride into the backyard with my head held high and shoulders tossed back. "Corina," I hear my name called out and see Dana running towards me. We collide. I stumble back and grab her tight to steady myself. "How are you?" Dana jumps up and down on the balls of her feet. "I'm fine," I giggle. She grabs my duffel bag and adds it to the pile of bags in the middle of the grass. I look towards the pool. David is doing a running jump. Jasmine and Tixiana lounge in the shallow end, chatting as Chris sneaks towards them from behind. Dana turns to me. "Okay, look pretty. Here comes Liam." Her eyes twinkle with mischief. I spin around to look, and my sunglasses land lopsided on my nose. "Hey, Corina." I sheepishly fix my sunglasses, then look up and see Liam, hands tucked into his board shorts, a smile on his face. His brown eyes shine. I feel my cheeks color as he steps forward and hugs me. A lingering smell of cologne tingles my senses. He sniffs. "You smell good." I smile and laugh. "Thank you. Putting on some spray was a good move." Liam steps back, smirks, then quickly strips off his shirt. Before I can register what is happening, he slings me over his shoulder. My sunglasses clatter on the stone ground. Liam bounds down the steps towards the pool. I admire the view of his butt shaking back and forth. Ready to be tossed in, he yells. I laugh and scream good-heartedly. No, don't do it. David, Chris, Tixiana, and Jasmine chat and laugh in the pool. Liam shifts me in his arms, and then I remember. Wait, you can't, I scream. My hearing aid is still on. Liam stops abruptly and then quickly backs away from the pool edge. He sets me on my feet and puts his hand on his chest, eyes wide. Shit, I forgot. He rubs the nape of his neck, his jet black hair sticking up. Thank God you remembered. I'm sorry. I sigh. It's all good. I should have reminded you earlier. All right. Liam rubs his hands together. Let's go swimming. He runs and dives into the pool, splashing the girls who shriek in dismay. I run to my duffel bag and take off my cochlear. The noises of the world vanish. I slip it into a small pocket, take off my shorts and shirt, and run to the pool. I hesitate at the edge and watch Chris scream something at David and Liam that I can't hear. I jump in. The cold water engulfs me. I open my eyes to blurry shapes under the water. I paddle my way up to the surface and start a splash fight with Tixiana and Jasmine. Dana joins in, and a couple minutes later, the boys whack us with pool noodles. After a while, we all tire and split up. The boys hold a contest of who can hold their breath longest underwater. Dana and Tixiana climb out of the pool. Jasmine and I lounge by the pool edge, our legs kicking under the water. That was such a good fight. I read Jasmine's lips. Pretty sure we kicked their asses. Pretty sure we totally did, I reply, making sure to keep my voice level. So, Jasmine looks at me, her eyebrows raised. So, what? I say, and wring my hair of excess water. Liam, her head leans closer to me, so I know she is whispering. What's going on there? I blush and glance at Liam, his jet black hair plastered to his head, counting down the seconds while David is submerged under the water. I don't know. I shift closer to her. He said I smelled good earlier. Do you think that means anything? Jasmine winces. Not sure. I doubt it. My face falls. But he is a shy boy, so maybe, she adds. I let out a frustrated breath. Out of my periphery, I see Dana and Tixiana dragging a radio to the pool edge. Dana clicks the button. Jasmine suddenly perks up. I love this song, she says. I smile and stay silent. I can't hear a thing. Dana jumps in the pool and makes a big splash. I wipe water from my eyes and open them to see Dana and Jasmine talking. I miss half the conversation because Dana's head is turned away from mine. Dana turns around and looks at me. This song is the best. Everyone is listening to it. I smile weakly and shrug. I forgot you can't hear it, Dana frowns. Sometimes I wish you weren't deaf. Me too.
That was Corina Cotran reading her story, Pool Party. In tonight's final story, our young narrator and her family bid farewell to Teta, her grandmother. From the chapel to the cemetery, we follow the rituals until a malfunctioning microphone cuts our narrator off from the father's words midway through her Teta's eulogy. Let's listen now as Corina Cotran reads her story, Silent Eulogy.
Unheard Eulogy by Corina Cotran. I shift my body on the hard wooden church bench. I feel tired. I rub my swollen eyes and wish I could just curl up in bed and go to sleep. My eyes well up again. I stare through blurred vision at the large photo of my grandmother, Teta. The gold ornate frame leans against a wooden easel. A lump forms in my throat. her trademark rouge lips widen in a vibrant smile, lighting up her face, her bronze-colored hair perfectly coiffed. Tater's brown eyes seem to twinkle at me like they did only a year ago, before everything happened. I put my head in my hands, palms pressed against my closed eyes. I see stars. "Everyone, please rise," announces Father George, a portly priest, in a magnified voice at the podium a few feet away from me. I pull my hands away from my head, my palms wet with my tears. I grit my teeth and grab a tissue. I stand up gingerly. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Mom and Dad standing at my right. My younger brother AJ stands on the other side, his lumbering form towering over me. Father George starts chanting in Arabic. I wish I had made the effort to learn the language. I struggle to decipher what he is saying. My eyes wander around the room. The chapel in the basement of the funeral home is small. The foyer gives the impression of being squeezed in. The small stage at the front is adorned with vases of flowers and wreaths bearing messages like, "Loving Tata, you will be missed," and "Rest in peace." Father George continues to chant at the small wooden podium. I look over at the picture frame again. I don't remember the last time I saw Tata look as she does in the photo. I grit my teeth to try and stave off the tears. I'm sick of crying. My eyes land on the one thing I've been avoiding for the past half hour, her casket. My breath hitches, and I quickly look away. Father George walks to a stand beside the framed picture that I hadn't noticed. A thurible hangs from the stand. His chant rises to a crescendo and echoes in the small space as he lifts the chain and swings it in small arcs. I exchange a glance with AJ. We both snicker. When we were younger and attended church, we used to run around in Tate's kitchen with a rubber ball attached to a string, pretending we were priests and blessing each other. Mom elbows me and gives me a warning look. AJ and I go quiet. AJ gently elbows me. I stifle a small smile when I see another warning glance from Mom. AJ puts his hands in front of him contritely, looking like the picture of innocence. The chanting stops. Father George clears his throat. The sound amplifies across the small chapel. I rub my still damp hands on my itchy black dress pants and cross my arms to ward off a phantom chill. Goosebumps rise on my exposed arms. "Amal was a wonderful person to have in your life," Father George begins the eulogy. "Anyone who met her knows how hospitable she was. She would cook you an entire feast if you asked." Soft laughter echoes in the chapel, and the mourners murmur in agreement. Mom slides her warm hand into mine and squeezes softly. I lean forward and grab another tissue. "Her kitchen was her home," Father George continues with a small smile on his face. "She is now with God, and he will take good care of her. Let us put our hands together and pray the Our Father. Then we will head off to the cemetery for burial." A sea of unknown family members clad in black stand in the sunshine, staring at the hole in the ground where Tata's casket lies. It's unbearably hot as the warm August air passes through my black clothing. Gentle, somber music plays from somewhere. I hold a red rose in my hand. Aunt Edlin, her face stoic, drops her rose on top of the casket. Dad moves ahead of me and does the same. My turn. Hot tears slide down my face as I step forward, blind to where I'm going, and stumble on the tarp surrounding the rectangle hole. Mom grabs my elbow. "I told you to watch where you were going," she hisses. I pay her no heed and drop the crumpled rose. I watch it float down and rest on the other red and white roses on top of the oak wood. I'm last to put the rose in the casket. After a moment of silence, Father George is about to speak. He fumbles the microphone. Everyone winces as feedback squeals through the cemetery. A mumbled apology later, he begins to speak, his low voice amplified. I stare at Dad's back, a piece of white string sits on his black suit. Amal, husband to the late Ashiel, mother to her children Edward and Edlin, a Teta to her grandchildren Karina and Ashiel. Teta Amal was known by everyone. She had such a giving heart. She had such selflessness. She opened the door to... Feedback squealed again, then silence. The mic stopped working. Father George's voice is faint, but manages to rise over the crowd. I'm just going to keep going without it. Teta always opened her door to anyone, especially those that needed food. Teta and her husband Ashiel. His voice suddenly becomes a faint murmur. I stand on the balls of my feet and crane my neck over Dad's shoulder. The soft whisper of Father George can be heard, but I can't discern what he is saying. I slump back down. I can't even see his face to lip read. I can hear the sound of the leaves rustle in the light summer breeze. I can hear the sniffles of people around me. I can hear my aunt sniffle beside me. I can hear my 8-month-old cousin Matthew crying in the distance. But I can only hear the softest undertone of Father George's voice as he continues talking about Teta. I don't hear a single thing he is saying. The white string on Dad's suit wriggles in the breeze, like a butterfly trying to escape its cocoon, and blows away. I follow it until I lose sight of it against the blue sky. We climb into the car after the funeral is over. The air feels heavy with something I can't quite decipher. My teeth clench tight. My jaw begins to ache. We pass the cemetery. I place my head against the cool window and watch the gravestones fade from view as the car turns onto the highway. Goodbye, Teta. I take a deep breath. My body aches and my head feels heavy. I plug the audio cable into my hearing aid and turn on my iPod. I click shuffle and stare back out the window. The soft melody of John Mayer's Gravity plays. A red Jeep pulls up next to me. I see a child stopped in a booster seat, giggling as his grandmother tickles his belly. I look away. My head pounds. I didn't hear Tata's eulogy. As the car turns into our driveway, I finally realize the nature of the unmistakable tension, grief. Dad turns off the ignition and steps out of the car. AJ and Mom get out and walk up the front steps. I follow them into the house, my eyes drifting closed. Dad grabs Lulu's pink leash off the counter and attaches it to my dog when she bounds down the steps to greet us. He leaves the house without a second glance. AJ heads downstairs. Mom cleans up the dishes in the kitchen from the family get-together that happened before the funeral. I kick off my black shoes. I lean on the wooden railing on the staircase and pull myself, step by step, to my upstairs bedroom. I open the door and enter. I shut the door gently behind me, turn around, and slump down against it. I didn't hear Tata's eulogy.
That was Karina Quatran reading her story, Silent Eulogy. This concludes Life Rattle number 1350. My name is Lori Callis. I had the pleasure of recording Karina reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Arnie Ackman and Guy Allen. Be sure to tune in to our next show to hear more news stories.